You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for October 19th, 2010. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hey, and welcome to another Music Manumit. I'm Tom Ray, and with me is...
Doug Whitfield.
How you doing, Doug?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah? Me too. I'm finally back to regular sleeping patterns again after what I had to do this weekend. It was a hectic week. The place I work for, we do a event called Good Stock. It's something they've done for, I want to say, over 10 years now. What they do is they dedicate 24 hours straight to nonprofits. Basically, the entire agency is dedicated to volunteering their time for 24 hours straight to build something for nonprofits, for things they need. And commercials, web banners, brochures, and logos, and we give them a choice of stuff like, what would you like for your company? Because we did it for 20 companies this year. The one I worked with was Juvenile Diabetes. I created a nice little header for them. They have this called this pack that they give kids. It's a backpack filled with information but you know, just lots of stuff, and it also comes with a little mascot bear. I think his name's Gregory the Juvenile Diabetes Bear or something like that.
That's a terrible name for a mascot.
I think that's it, but I'm not that far off. But it's a nice little bear, and it's got like the medic bracelet on and everything. So they were showing it to us, and they left the bag behind, and I set up a photo shoot with the bear sticking out of the bag, and we created a tagline for it and made a nice little header. And then I also created some web ads for Badger Flight Program, which is a company that takes war veterans for free to the monuments in D.C. to visit the monuments that are dedicated to them for the wars that they fought in. But it was great because we set up the whole thing. We decided, because it was such a nice October night, we all just set up and made a fire pit outside and coded outside all night. I mean, I was coding outside till like 5 in the morning. We had a projector and used one of the extra laptops that we had and watched DVDs all night. We watched like Revenge of the Nerds and Face Off. And we had that going, like, we just playing against the building outside. So it was a good time had by all.
That sounds a lot like the death houses. Have you ever been to one of those? I don't think you probably have.
I'm not even sure I know what that is.
Two of them, yeah. I've been to two of them in Milwaukee. I only stayed overnight on one of them. I think it's superhappydeathhouse.com.
Death house, you're saying D-E-V?
Yeah. So.
Oh, okay.
I think it started in San Francisco, as many of these things do. But the ones in Milwaukee, we had one, you know, Taps. I think Tracy Apps, her Twitter handle is Taps, though, T-A-P-P-S.
Mm-hmm.
It was at her place last year, and the year before that.
Like her house?
Yeah, and the year before that, it was at Bucket Works. This is back when Bucket Works was in their old warehouse location. Basically, it's just sort of a coding party. It looks like it's superhappydeathhouse.org. But, you know, people just bring their projects and hang out and do whatever, you know.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to talk about before we moved on, too, was went to my first bar camp, Milwaukee. Actually, the first event in Milwaukee of this nature at all. It was my first visit to Bucket Works, too, which is a great place.
I've never been to this Bucket Works. I went to the old Bucket Works several times.
What was the old Bucket Works like?
It was on 6th Street and, kind of in the ghetto, but it was in this, not abandoned warehouse, but this warehouse that was no longer a warehouse. It was like 22,000 square feet and they had all sorts of stuff going on, but the roof kept leaking and the, landlord was kind of like, I'm not fixing it. So they were like, well, we can't like have, you know, people can't do work if their computers are getting water poured on them. So we're just going to move. So for a while they didn't have a physical location, but now they do again.
Yeah, well, apparently they only moved over to 5th Street.
Right.
Is it still which, fine? Although the streets in Milwaukee go on forever, so I mean it could be completely...
Yeah, this one was like really, like I walked the lake from it. And, like, right downtown by all the tall buildings, like, through downtown to the lake. Hmm. It was, it was about maybe a block away from the Bradley Center.
Okay.
So it was a block towards the ghetto from the Bradley Center.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been to this part of Milwaukee where it was at, but it wasn't bad. And it was a Saturday evening. The event was Saturday and Sunday. And I went to the Saturday one.
So that's the way they roll over there, is having the two day ones.
Well, I had a family event I had to get back for on Sunday, so I ended up just leaving at the end of the day. Yeah, so basically this was the first one for me, and a couple of cool sessions, couple of cool ideas. The first one I went into because it sounded like something that was related to something we're kind of looking into at work. It was a session on Sitecore.
Okay, so Sitecore, just as a brief list of the technologies that it uses, it's ASP.NET 2.0 or above.
Which is a CMS that's made to work with Microsoft SQL Server.
Your database selections, you can use SQL Server, obviously, since it's a Microsoft-style solution, SQL Server is probably more preferred, but it performs well in Oracle, MySQL, and SQLite supported out of the box.
We have a company that we're working with right now. All their stuff is on Microsoft SQL Servers, so we're looking for a CMS. I went and checked it out and then learned what I needed to know about maybe 10 minutes into it, and then was like, I really don't care about this CMS. The guys, they gave a really good presentation, but the second they said that, first of all, you can't even download it, you have to buy a license from someone.
Sitecore works entirely through partner organizations, so they actually don't sell licenses direct. So typically, if you're a development group, you'll steal.
And that license is ridiculously priced, and it was, and then I was like, oh, all right, I don't like it then. And it seems like too much work. But, I sat through the rest of the thing and learned a lot about it, and they have their own naming conventions.
I'm sure they said this 1,000 times there, but you can get up and use your 2 feet if you're not.
No, I know, but you feel so rude.
Okay. Maybe I'm just a dick, but I'd just be like, whatever, peace.
But anyway, so that was an interesting, I learned what I needed to learn. It was cool. That was my first one of the day. And then I went into the next one. Actually, I went into the wrong room first. There was a presentation by Brad Gazarek, I think his name is.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brad Gazarek. Yes, that's how I'm supposed.
Yeah, he's a math guy.
Yeah. I thought I recognized him. I think he was at one of the podcast meetups that we had here, too.
He was.
And he was giving a talk on Gatorius. But before that, I walked into the wrong room. And in the room I walked into, there was a big, long sheet of paper that was rolled out on the table, and a bunch of stuff was drawn all over the place. And there was a guy taking pictures of it, and people were leaving the room. And I asked him, I was like, what was this thing? And he said, oh, look at this drawing here. What does it look like? And it looked like a picture of a robot pulling a kite in the air. And then there was stuff shooting out of its head and landing into a car, and like just all these crazy drawings. And then I told him, and he's like, what do you think that is? And I don't remember what I said, but I explained something about it. And he was just like, oh, well, then let me tell you what it was really about. It was about a guy talking about wind energy. Then he talked about how you need to have things that are up high enough in the air to get the most amount of power for the wind, because the higher up you are, the more wind power there is. I guess the talk was about taking notes as doodles for looking at a different way to work on things. So what they did is they explained it first, and then the guy goes, okay, now I'm going to talk about wind energy, and you guys just draw what I'm talking about. And I'm just going to, he basically was like reading from a Wikipedia page, like what wind energy is. And all these people had different interpretations of how they were writing the notes. The point is that it gives you a way to look back on it and kind of think of the conversation instead of just looking at a big long list of notes and like going, oh yeah, I kind of remember this. And while, you're drawing, you can draw other things, and it helps you remember the moment. But on another tier, what it does is it helps creative thinking outside of it, because you show somebody who has no idea what you were drawing about and go, describe this. And it might open a new way of thinking about it outside of the box, because you're not looking at words or somebody's notes and like going, okay, I see what you guys were talking about here. It's like you're trying to decipher what's happening on the page from the drawings that people are doing. And I thought that was cool. And I was like, well, damn, I missed that one. I wish I would have sat in that session. And then I sat in on Brad's Gatorius was one of the things he talked about. His Git/GitHub talk.
I guess that's another question I should ask. Who's using Git here? And then as far as Git replacing something, that's generally Subversion.
And learned a lot about that. We use SVN at work, and Microsoft GitHub sounds like it's the new cool thing, and that's what he said it was.
Basically, something else will be monumentally awesomer than Git. But right now, it's pretty much the bee's knees. And I love the command line interface, but it's not everyone's cup of tea.
He said it's the new cool thing until the next new cool thing comes out.
It's fairly new.
So, and he loves it right now, until something better comes along. So, I'd never worked with that before,
yeah,
and I thought it was kind of an interesting thing.
But I am kind of curious if you've ever known people to do version control with their music, like with different tracks and stuff like that. Because some of these collaborative sites that we've talked about in the past, I don't know if they use them or, but it seems like it could work pretty well.
That's true. I mean, like that. Say that because version control is essentially what Dropbox is.
Yeah.
And if you were to actually save a, like say you're actually saving, even though it, truthfully it would be very slow, but if you were saving the master file of a work that you're doing, say you're doing it on Audacity, and you're saving the master Audacity file and recording it directly on Dropbox, when you make the changes, subsequently it would update it on the other person's box.
Well, I'm thinking about like the different tracks. Like you got your saxophone guy in New York, and you got your keyboardist in Chicago. And
right. No, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. Everybody would be working from the same program, though. Like you would record your track into Audacity, where the master Audacity would be on Dropbox. And then when the next person turns on their computer, it would update their file and they would open it and there would be the track. And then you would edit it. And then the next time that person over there opens up their opens up their Dropbox, it would update their version would be updated to with the edits.
Right. I've never used like multi-tracking in Audacity, but
I'm just using that as an example. I'm saying with anything.
Well, right. I'm just the only multi-tracking I've ever done has been for video. So visualizing how this would work, but I think we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, but that's an interesting idea, and I think that's kind of what. See, because you need a web hub, you can't really do it. Doing it on Dropbox, like I said, would be very slow. But if you had a web hub like Compose, I think that's the way that one works, which I still need to get in and try working on that. I always liked the service, but I've never actually had a chance to use it yet. But let me mention two more things before we go on. The other session that I was in was one for HTML5.
Okay. My name's Arlen. I'm Paladin Web Services, one of the sponsors here. What I want to talk about is HTML5. I'm not going to do a whole lot of theory. We're going to talk a little bit about what HTML5 is and some coding standards and things like that before we get started.
That one was very strange because I went there to learn about it, but the guy that was talking, he must have been a teacher because he seemed to, while he was telling you about it, he would kind of turn and go, anybody? Anybody?
The old article would end here. What do you think this would be? Somebody want to take a guess?
And it was very weird. I felt like I was in school. That one was very strange. And then I went to one where I was like, okay, I'm going to look at one more before I take off and go home. And the last session I went to of the day was how to draw the human head. And I was like, yeah, maybe that'll be interesting. I missed out on drawing one before. Maybe this one will be cool. So I walked in, and the woman was setting up, and I'm an animator, so I mean, I know how to draw. I just wanted to look and see what her take on it was. And
The human face is made up of surprisingly awesome and simple proportions, actually. I never actually draw faces this way anymore, but that's because I've been drawing faces since I was, like, you know, six. I do art stuff. But ideally, we should come to the table so I'm not
You know, just different people's types of art. But then as we were into it, I was like, I should get going. It's starting to get late. So I waved and it was just, you know, I got up and I waved and I said, hey, thanks. But I felt bad. But she did have one interesting thing to say. She talked about the fact that most people, when they draw the head, then they draw the shape of the head, and then the next thing they go into is they draw the eyes. And she thinks that the mouth is more characteristic on people and makes the person look more like the person on the placement and the shape of the mouth.
I like to start with the lips. If you draw a pair of lips, you can figure out where everything else on the face is supposed to be. And because the important thing about drawing the human face, if you want to draw a realistic human face, you can screw up the eyes as much as you want, you can screw up the nose as much as you want, you can screw up the shape of the face if you want, and the ears, and the forehead, everything. But if you get the mouth exactly right, it will always look like the person you're drawing.
I thought that was kind of insightful. I was like, it's true. Most people do start with the eyes. It just seems because you're starting right in the middle and working your way out, just like any other drawing. So I got that from it. So I did pull a little bit of something from, you know, everywhere. And I like the fact that Barcamp is very creative and technological. So it was a fun time. And it was my first time down there. And it was to the Bucketworks place. And I liked it. So We got some stories to cover here.
Yeah.
One that's particularly funny from the that I found on the internet from a band that I actually grew up loving. One of the reasons I got into music was because of this band. And he thinks differently about the way that people should share their music, which, truthfully, I'm not surprised because they're such a marketable commodity. But Gene Simmons of Kiss thinks that in regards to peer-to-peer sharing of music, that you should, and this is his quote, you should sue everybody and take their homes and their cars. So that's his reaction to the question on what does he think of peer-to-peer sharing. So he sells his band on everything. They were on, well, they still are on lunchboxes. I had Kiss pajamas when I was growing up. They had trading cards. They had their own magazine. You know, they had comic books. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the Kiss comic book.
No.
No?
I know about Kiss.
They had a comic book where it was a storyline, and the tagline of it was that apparently in the ink that they used to print, and this could be total just BS, but the way they marketed it is that it was the text was done in red ink, and they pricked their fingers and dripped blood into the ink that they used for the comic so that every panel had a little bit of the actual Kiss members' blood in the ink. That was
seems like it would be a lot of blood.
Well, I mean, obviously they didn't drain pints out of themselves. We're talking like one minuscule drop. And then, but truthfully, if you know anything about the printing industry and the different places this would go to and different countries that it would get printed to if it's mass marketed, highly doubt this actually happened. But that was what they said. They may have done it.
Yeah, they may have tried it.
What's that?
I said they may have done the first part.
Maybe. But anyway, my point is that, you know, they sell themselves everywhere. You know, they had Kiss pinball games. So I'm not surprised that he doesn't like people getting their stuff for free or thinking that anybody else should. But I don't think it's realistic anymore, especially with the way the music model is these days. So, I don't know. And he, I guess he was interviewed at the Cannes Film Festival, and he was just saying, make sure your brand is protected. Make sure there are no incursions. Be litigious. Sue everybody. Take their homes, their cars. Don't let anybody cross that line, is his thinking on it. And he thinks that the music industry was asleep at the wheel, and they didn't have the balls to sue everybody. Every fresh-faced, freckle-faced college kid who downloaded material. So they were left with hundreds of thousands of people without jobs, and there is no industry anymore because of these people that shared music. So he thinks it's because they didn't sue everybody.
Yeah, because legal, you know, litigation is cheap. Mm-hmm. So
it's interesting because on one end, he blames the record industry itself for not doing anything, so it's their fault. But it's their fault because they didn't do anything. Not because it's their fault because they're trying to use a tired old model that doesn't work anymore. So I find that interesting. But a question I have is actually a question for you. How much do you actually use peer-to-peer software anymore?
I guess it depends on how you define peer-to-peer.
Well, let's say like your LimeWares or your FrostWires or, you know,
I haven't used any of those.
See, neither have I. And this thing is specifically geared more towards, that he says, LimeWire kits. Which, I didn't know LimeWire was still around. I know FrostWire is around, and FrostWire is trying to promote themselves as a music peer-to-peer for, like, asking artists to come forward and release their stuff on Creative Commons. Like, if you go to your site, go to their site, that's kind of what they're trying to do. It's like, oh, hey, bands, share your stuff this way.
Yeah, like ClearBits. Does that for torrents.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the other thing, too, a lot of people do know about peer-to-peer stuff. Like at work, like the people that aren't very, you know, tech savvy, they all know about some sort of peer-to-peer and, you know, like LimeWire or, you know, FrostWire or whatever the heck. And they know nothing about BitTorrents. They have no idea what BitTorrents are. And I find that BitTorrents might be a little too over the head of just the normal everyday user.
I don't. You click on a .torrent file, and then it downloads stuff. So.
Right, but you have to have the torrent file open, and this is where I think it loses it for most everyday users. You open up LimeWire, and you're in a place where you search for it, and then you find it, and then you download it inside of there. Whereas BitTorrent, you can't open up BitTorrent and go, hey, find me this. Well, on most of them, you can't. Like the KTorrent, yeah. It has like the search engines built in, but it takes you to the web page. You actually have to go to the web outside of what you're using and then click on a BitTorrent file to open it up in your BitTorrent thing. I think that's where it has the disconnect, is that it's not one set thing. But that's also why it makes it harder to track, I think, because there's no central place for it to be used. It's not really a peer-to-peer.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, what I was asking. I mean, it is peer-to-peer. It's peer-to-peer.
But it's built somewhere else. It's not built inside the product that you're using. It's not sharing it directly from that. It can be sharing it from a server, or it can be sharing it from your computer if you choose to seed it from there. So that's why I think that even though he's saying peer-to-peer sharing, I don't think this is the way people do it anymore. I don't think people get their music this way anymore. I think I get most of mine from MP3 blogs.
Yeah. I get mine from Jamendo.
Right. Well, that's I'm saying, okay.
4 bazillion songs on Jamendo.
Let me restate that for the person I'm talking to. I think that's how people get their non-Creative Commons music.
Well,
the stuff they shouldn't be getting.
I mean, you said you got this from MP3 sites.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying I can't be bothered. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I guess the question I have is if people who are listening to this, I mean, how off do you think the KISS, I wouldn't necessarily call him front man. In the article, it says he's the front man. Paul Stanley's the front man. But how off do you think
Gene Simmons is like the face.
Well, he is now because he's the one who's got the television show. But Paul Stanley was the guy.
I mean, he's been the face of KISS. But for years, Gene Simmons has been the face of KISS.
I guess so.
I mean, ever since I can remember. Like, I mean, that doesn't mean, obviously, he was the lead singer, but he's been,
he was one of the singers.
He's, like, the KISS guy.
I don't know. When I was growing up, Paul Stanley was the KISS guy. Gene Simmons was just he was known as the demon.
But, I mean, for, like, the last 20 years, I mean, I don't know what Paul Stanley
Paul Stanley's really not been in the forefront as much anymore. Gene Simmons is all over the darn place.
Well, you were asking how I got music.
Oh, no, and then after that, I guess I was just going to ask the people at home, do you think he's off base on thinking this, or do you think what he's saying is a little bit true? I mean, obviously, he's going to the extreme, but it once again comes down to, does it matter what everybody else is doing with it, or is it, I mean, stuff that's already licensed, obviously, that's their prerogative. So he may not be completely off, but he's telling other people that you shouldn't give your stuff away, you should protect what you own. And sue anybody that has your stuff.
I think that we have a self-selecting group that we're likely to hear a lot of the same answer.
Very true.
On that question.
But I mean, maybe for the people, the person, first-time listener, that's just going, "Hey, this is about licensing your music." What they think about it?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's perfectly right as far as the still legal to do that. Yeah, I mean, like you said, you can go into the extreme.
So, next story we have is one that you had posted.
Yeah, I posted this to StatusNet a while back. I don't know if you saw it, though. Or was it this one? I don't remember if it was this one or not. Anyway, I posted a one. No, this one I found today, actually, I believe.
Is this the choosing and using free license?
Yeah. Did you get a chance to take a look at that chart that's on there?
No, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet chart.
As far as charts go.
I mean, it's got a lot of good information on it. For people that don't understand or are confused about, the way Creative Commons licensing works and, the whole, Creative Commons is open source and all that kind of stuff. This graph chart thing, clearly labels which one are non-free. And rather than having like paragraphs of text that say this is why they're not free, it's a flowchart. Mm-hmm. I mean, it says, Aesthetics works. Go here. Are you selling copies? Yes. Is your model endorsement or is your model Monopoly? Your model is Monopoly. Allow fan works? No. Creative Commons attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives. And, you know, there's all of those. And so, you know, you were saying that a lot of artists that you talk to, they kind of want the standard copyright. And then you ask them these questions. You say, well, do you care if people do this? And then, you know, when there's a series of answers that would direct them to a Creative Commons license. So I think it would be pretty useful.
Yeah, most of the chart, it looks like, applies for our conversation, applies with the right side of it, which is when you go to which license and then type of work, and then the right-hand side is art, music, film, etc. Which, yeah, I'm going down the list and looking at the different ways that you can go with it. Selling copies, endorsement, Monopoly. That's a bit... that seems a bit much when they call it Monopoly, but, you know. But,
Well, that's what it is. I mean, if you have... you know, if there's a single point of access, that's a monopoly. It's not an antitrust.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is that could be misconstrued. I mean, like,
well, right. But I mean, like a trademark is a monopoly. I mean, that's why you get a trademark. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. But I see what you're saying. Monopoly has...
it makes it sound like you're saying, oh, you want to make a monopoly? Then go this way. You know, I think they could have used a better word. But I understand what you're... I understand.
Yeah, I think that's a... standard term for right or for wrong, and maybe that needs to be changed, but that's a pretty standard term in these software or in these licenses.
Yeah, I guess just growing up, I always thought that was a more negative term, which it's not.
Yeah. But they also have, they do have the text, and I think this is better than some of the other ones because it talks about the differences between free and semi-free. And a lot of them call, you know, just are like, it's like a hardened line. It's like non-free, free. You know, you're either a Nazi or you're not a Nazi.
That's really what it comes down to, isn't it?
I mean, that's how people portray it, you know? Like, you know, we were having some discussions with some individuals that had a very hard line about this. And there are plenty of individuals that have such a line. And, I mean, you know, I think, obviously, we use the non-commercial, so we're, you know, we've got a line as well, but we're, you know, keeping some of that semi-free stuff within our line, and it's more nuanced than the sort of for or against. And we had some discussions, I think mostly me, with the Headphonica guys, which we're going to be interviewing next week, which we can talk about more later. But, you know, they were concerned about, you know, some of these things. And I think we'll talk to them a little bit.
Yeah, I think that would be a good discussion. It would be good to build off of definitely what this chart points out. It's weird, though. The very bottom one on the bottom right, the selection says, allow fans to use non-derivative, no.
Well, that's the BSD. I mean, that's the BSD versus GPL. Because if it's not share alike, then you can, you know, then you can close it up.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you use the BYNC, then that means that, you know, somebody can make OSX out of your song.
Right.
But, you know, the SA is the copyleft part of it. So, I mean, you know, it's, they have it, you know, free / copyleft and then partial copyleft and free non-copyleft. But really they should have the non-free copyleft as well, because that's what the BYNCSA, that's non-free copyleft. I mean, I guess maybe copyleft has a certain definition that I'm not aware of, but it's the same sort of thing. I mean, that's the share alike is the copyleft.
Oh, and you know what? Okay, I finally realized, okay, because it says allow fans to use non-derivative, and then no,
right.
That would be...
so that means they...
well, oh, because then it would have to be share-alike.
They have to use the same...
I was just confused because the non-derivative was not in the license choice for the not use, right. Let fans use non-derivative.
Well, that's because the one before that was allow fans works.
Okay.
And so if the answer to that one is no.
But then they have to share alike in the license if you don't.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's even, if you look over to the left, there's one that's kind of like what you were talking about before when you were speaking with the Headphonica guys about the politically dangerous, where it says yes, and then you use non-derivative, which that was kind of like what you were talking about with the newsletter, is that things couldn't be taken out of context in that newsletter, so it was put under a non-derivative work.
Right.
And I find that interesting that that's actually in there under creative work.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, like I said, they go into more detail in the actual article. Up at the top, they have a, you know, it's like 1, 2, and 3, and it says, you know, is this an aesthetic work? And then if so, click, you know, if so, skip below. They should have an anchor in there. And it says, if so, skip the licensing aesthetics work. Should be. Because they're not in order either. Like, one is aesthetics works. And then the very first thing that they talk about is computer programs. Like, what kind of sense does that make? But what if? And then aesthetic works is what they talk about last, even though it was number one in the questions. And then they go 2, 3, 1 in the actual text. So if you're looking at the article and you scroll down and you see software or computer programs is what they call it, or before you get to aesthetics work, do not be discouraged. It is down there at the bottom. And yeah, they talk about the business models and such, which is something that I know you've talked a lot about in the past, Tom. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think where exactly where these links are. Oh, yeah. So on number under licensing aesthetics work, point one, make money on selling copies of your work. The last sentence of the first real paragraph there is, some examples of this have been very successful, and there's two links in there. And one of them is a link to an interview with Nina Paley, and then the other one is a link to a Tech Dirt article where it talks about how successful she was. And the title of this one is Nina Paley releases some data on Citizens the Blues, : the more she shared, the more she made. So that's an interesting take on that. I don't know who this person is. You know who Nina Paley is?
Not off the top of my head. But I do have to agree with that. Because we sold more by giving our stuff away, even just allowing the entire thing to be listened to. We've sold more doing it this way than we did the first, I want to say it was 3 years that we just tried actually only selling our album. I don't know. We still sell quite a bit. I have to admit, we still make money. That adding donations is really also another thing that people should remember can happen, is that you can say, yeah, hey, feel guilty about doing this, then send us some money. I've even had people I know ask me, what's the usual price that people, you know, pay you for an album on average? And I'll go, no, just download it. And they'll go, no, how much, what's the average? And I'll be like, okay, $5. I'll just say something, I don't know. And they'll do...
Well, it shouldn't be that hard to get those numbers.
Well, no, because I feel bad, because I'm like, even, you know, you're sitting right next to me. I can just give you a CD. Just, you know, yeah. But they want to help you out.
You should carry around charts mm-hmm. with you. With, like, me.
I'll get one of those collapsible pointer antennas. So I can...
Like, when you say average, do you mean median or do you mean mean? Because the mean is $4.73. But the median is higher. And it's actually $5.23. And then they won't.
Look, I'm the wrong guy to get into a math conversation with. I'm going to lose every time. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
That's why you have your chart.
That's true. I should have more of a reference.
So anyway, there's some of this stuff is on question copyright. They're talking about the endorsement model, and I don't really know. I didn't get far enough into this to see what it means by the endorsement model. Do you know anything about this endorsement model?
Endorsement model? No, I do not, unless it's one where the endorsement model is that you create funding ahead of time to pay for the work, and then you give those people the free versions afterward, maybe cut them in on it. Maybe that's the only thing I could think of off the top of my head as far as what the endorsement model would be. Kind of.
I think that's more patronage. Actually, it starts it out on this question copyright creator endorsed.
Because I know another thing that people have been doing recently is using things like, there's a site out there where you can actually ask for donations and you try and raise money for it. I think we've talked about it before.
Well, Diaspora did that.
Yes, right? It was the same company that I'm talking about that they used. And what you do is you ask people to donate for, say you're going to make a studio album, or you know, you want to print your CDs after recording the studio album but you don't have any money, and people donate and you give them rewards for donating to you, and that's what I'm thinking the endorsement model would be.
Well, this is different. This is like, so, you know, there are 10 sites that have your freely available license. So the Pirate Bay has it, Clearbits has it, Bandcamp has it, but you didn't put it on the Pirate Bay or Clearbits. You put it on Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. So there can be you can put a creator endorsed sticker, you know, logo, whatever, mm-hmm. on there, and then it can say creator endorsed, 25% supports the artist, or you know, there's all these different ones. I don't know why this is.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that if you actually give us the money, you're proving that, yes, we will get this money. Or
right.
We get this much of the money. Like, say you're using Bandcamp and they take out a percentage of what it owns. That means, and I want to say that Bandcamp, it would be the 75% one. I'm not sure. That might not be correct. But you would say if you pay for this, 75% of this will go to the artist. That's cool. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just another way of doing it. I mean, they don't talk about this, or at least not where I've read on it. But, I mean, Professor Click has a different model. I mean, his answer is not really, I mean, I guess maybe the answer would be, well, the answer to this, as it said, is do you plan to make money by selling copies of your work? Now, if your work means the freely licensed materials, then I think he would answer no. But he does make money off his other works, where people will contract him for theme songs and things like that. So he is making money creatively, and he's using his Creative Commons stuff both as artistic expression, of course, but also sort of as like advertising his skills. I mean, that's what a lot of open source software does. I mean, those developers are like, hey, I have, you know, 10 patches in the kernel, you know, Intel, you should hire me. And they're like, yeah, those are pretty sweet patches. Let's hire you.
I'm sorry, I pictured elbow patches like college professors. Those are some pretty sweet patches, dude.
No, that's not what I meant. For anybody who's not familiar with, I don't want to say with open source software, because not everybody does.
Open source software collaboration.
A lot of people are familiar with the idea. Yeah, with actually the development. So a patch is like a fix. So if there's something wrong with it, then you would. So in a way, it is like a patch on jeans. And I think the elbow patches are kind of just. You know,
well, in a roundabout way, it's the, you know, those updates you get on your computer that go update this now for security reasons. Well, that's the same thing in the open source community. You go, hey, this is messed up and I found a way to fix it.
Anyway, it's the same sort of model. I mean, it's a little bit different, mm-hmm. but I think it's similar to that. And I put in there in the show notes, this is just mostly for mm-hmm. you, Tom, and maybe we'll throw them out there. The links to the Nina Haley or Pele or whatever it is,
her stuff underneath that first. And that article, I mean, we'll link to it, the main one, but it's from the Free Software Magazine, which we've discussed some articles off there before.
Well, cool.
But, yeah.
I had one more thing I wanted to talk about. It was an article that I found on – where did I find it? I don't know where I found it. But it's about something that I've kind of forgotten about. You haven't heard – or at least I haven't heard about it in quite a while. But it's about net neutrality. And apparently last month a lot of musicians decided that – or I guess something's going on in Congress where they're actually talking about net neutrality again. So the article is over on futureofmusic.org, and it says more musicians stand up for net neutrality. And, I mean, you remember when this was becoming a thing and everybody was going against it and going, oh, no, the internet's going to be tunneled or you know, bottlenecked or something like that. I never really understood what they were saying, but what it sounded like is they were going to give priority to other people and everybody else was kind of just going to have to wait behind these priority people.
Yeah, and basically, I mean, the idea behind it is that, you know, they're business critical, you know, things or life critical things that are happening, and somebody's Halo game or their Netflix download is not as important.
Right, and with the way that the net is going and the way that stuff is all going to be cloud-based and the way that stuff already is kind of cloud-based and the advancement of mobile, I feel like this isn't going to be as difficult of a process as people think it was going to be a few years ago. Because since so many people are using it this way, I feel like they're going to be like, okay. Basically what it is the FCC is getting in there and trying to make it – ISPs are trying to block people from using Torrent. It's kind of like the crap that people block you from using at work, your own ISP is going to go, oh, we're not going to let you share your files –
No, that's not what at all. That's not at all what it is.
No.
It's about like Verizon doesn't want, you know, Verizon has X amount of pipes, and Google, cuz they're gigantic, they use up a lot of those pipes, and Verizon is like, hey, you're using our pipes. You use them more than anybody else does. Why don't you pay more than anybody else does?
Okay, because I was under the impression, too, that it included, and it says here, too, open internet platforms.
Well, that's the concern that people have.
So they're saying like this may be an outcome of it because those are the things that use more of the bandwidth.
They'll have the power, presumably, to enact those sorts of things. But the real reason they want it is just so that people aren't hogging up all the bandwidth that aren't paying for. I mean, they're paying for the speed, but they're not paying for the amount of traffic that's going through. You know, and from the other side of things, you know, Google is looking to Verizon and say, hey, our stuff is slow, but we're awesome. It should be faster. And so maybe they can give Verizon some more money so that their packets get through a little faster. I mean, because there's two things happening. There's the pipe size, and then there's which is what, you know, home users are restricted by usually. But then there's also sort of the congestion. You know, it's like an HOV lane. That's what Google wants. They want an HOV lane. That's not to say that BitTorrent is going to be lessened. It's just going to be lessened when it's fighting against a bunch of other stuff, whereas Google is not going to have to fight against that stuff. And, you know, some people are like, hey, this isn't fair. But, I mean, the sort of logical conclusion of them sort of starting this is that that Verizon will purposely make, you know, Sprint stuff slower because they want Sprint to look bad. You know, and stuff like that. I mean, that's sort of the devious things that people think will happen. And I'm not suggesting that they won't happen. But it's not an anti-BitTorrent or anti-file sharing thing. That's not what's going on.
But like you had said, it's something that they're afraid is going to be part of what the outcome will be.
Right. Once people are like, hey, you know, packet shaping is something totally cool. Why don't You know, and then, so what'll happen then is Universal will be like, hey, you're already doing this packet shaping thing, you know, just because, you know, you know, Google has their HOV lane. Why don't you also make it so that BitTorrent is really, really slow?
Right.
Can you do that for us? We'll give you
some
money.
That's kind of what I was trying to say. I may have just been a misunderstanding it a little bit, but that was...
Well, I think, yeah, I guess I was taking what you were saying as saying, like, that was...
Like, turning off the service. No, I didn't mean that, but I think I may have worded it that way. It's basically I was trying... Yeah. No,
yeah.
I think that is kind of... I
think that's just not the main... That's not the main thing about it. That's just... I mean, some people are upset about that, but I don't... You know, the thing about it is that Verizon doesn't want to piss off their customers. As much as, you know, evidence may be contrary to that, they don't want to piss off their customers.
At least not through net connections.
Right, right. And so, but, I mean, there's some, you know, a free speech sort of thing here. You know, like, you know, what if they give, you know, make, you know, the Democratic website really slow and the Republican website really fast, or, you know... That's the sort of thing that people are really concerned about when they're talking about free speech, and you know that's sort of the reason that people are so concerned. But there is this other sort of, like, you know, for people that use you know, BitTorrent legitimately, they're always concerned about things that could be used just to say, hey, this is BitTorrent, this is bad. Because that's not true.
Yeah. And in the article, they have a copy of the letter that they sent off, and some of the artists that are supporting it are, and I wish they were more relevant, but they're not. But at least to today, there's REM, Jax.
Yeah, REM's a huge name.
I don't know anymore. I don't really think they are anymore. You know? I mean, they put out an album about a year ago, and it kind of poof. You know, what?
There's, okay, I mean, maybe their new stuff is not super relevant, but I mean, that's like saying that the Beatles aren't relevant. I mean, that's silly.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they could have beefed it up with some new people. Get Justin Bieber on there and it would go through like that. That's
yeah,
what I'm saying.
No. No, I mean, yeah, there could be newer. I mean, basically what you're saying,
I guess,
is
I don't mean relevant, yeah. I mean newer people. Because it's like, yeah. REM, Jackson Browne, The Roots, you know, they've been around for a long time. OK Go, OK, they're pretty recent. Moby, you know, Bonnie Raitt, Roseanne Cash, and then I don't even know who the last one is. Aaron McEwen? I'm not even really sure who that is. But anyway, so they have a copy of the letter that they wrote to them, and... I was going to say something else about it, but I do not remember what it was. So I found that interesting, and then their names are all signed at the bottom of it. So
I didn't know that this website existed.
Yeah, there was a huge conference this weekend of the Free Future of Music Coalition. They streamed it live. It wasn't this weekend. It was on Monday. It was the Future of Music Coalition actually had an event out, I don't know where. I was watching it online, and they were linking to stuff like this on their website all throughout the event. It was kind of interesting. They had a lot of strange guests and interesting talks about the way that music is going and what we should be doing as far as educating and, you know, helping build a new model for the music business. It was really interesting. I kept it on the background. You know, sometimes it just sounded like C-SPAN, and then other times I'd really listen. Because it was in a conference format. I mean, if ever they could make music really boring, this was the format for it. There was really just a panel of people sitting and talking. And occasionally it would get heated, and that's when my ears would perk up. But for the rest of it, it was like listening to a recording of somebody recording their college professor and listening back to it later on. It was, you know.
The Democrats. Percussionist from California would like to...
Exactly. I'm sitting there watching it going, somebody throw a chair. So, but it was a cool event, and I had just heard about it.
Wrestling ring? Is that why you wanted
something?
To
get a little Jerry Springer action in there. I don't know.
Does this normally happen on C-SPAN? Maybe I've not watched C-SPAN.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is that's what it was making it like C-SPAN for? Is because it was really boring and it was just a bunch of people sitting at a table talking about things. And this is music. Music. It's supposed to be rock and roll, man.
Not all music is rock and roll. I know that like Elvis Presley is.
Hey, you know what? It may not all be rock and roll, but every one of them has groupies, so there's something going on backstage. All right.
So. All right. That's fair. So Aaron McYone. I don't even. It says.
I want to say it's Aaron McEwen.
McEwen. Yeah. I mean, they have capital Y-O-N-E.
She was in one of the panels I watched. Okay.
Yeah, but I said she was country. She's not country. She's folk.
Ah, I see.
But she does a bunch of stuff, not just folk. But anyway, I was looking at her website here.
Yeah, I just pulled it up right now.
This is hilarious. It says, watch a video of Aaron and Rachel Maddow performing a song they wrote together via text message. That's like the greatest thing ever.
Nice.
I mean, the song may suck, but the idea...
I like it.
Have I told you... I think I talked to somebody about this at work. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is at work. But I may have told you this, too. Is that I'll see songs and they'll be like, you know, this person used a mathematical formula to write their song. Or this person uses instruments that they made. And I'm just like, man, that sounds so cool. And then I listen to it, and I'm like, man, this sucks.
Concept it's good, but otherwise it leaves you disappointed.
Yeah, I mean,
kind of like the They Might Be Giants album where they recorded the entire thing using Thomas Edison's recording gear. When I read the review for that, or that they were doing it, it was an entire album where they went to the Thomas Edison Museum, where they used his, recorded all their stuff using the recording equipment that he invented, but the album itself was kind of disappointing. But in theory, I heard that idea and I was like, that's fucking brilliant. That's awesome. Yeah, then it was disappointing.
Okay, I have a question for you. Who is Roseanne Cash, like Johnny Cash's daughter or something?
I believe so, yes. Either that
Johnny
or
Cash
it's his
died.
Ex-wife. I can't remember.
She can't be Roseanne Cash still, unless she was Roseanne Cash before they got married. And that'd just be weird.
No, you can keep your name after you get divorced.
Really?
Yeah, Tina Turner did it.
I guess you can change her name to whatever you want.
Yeah, but Tina Turner kept her last name. She was Ike she was Ike Turner's wife.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems I don't know. Disingenuous.
You feel gypped? That's not your real name? That's it. I'm not talking to you anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like they're using their name for power or something. I don't know.
Totally are. And the other like thing, too, is that people, that's what they know them as. So it's hard to go back. You know?
I mean, I can see that.
Because if you run into people, you know, you tell them your last name is different, and then they'll be like, oh, why? And then you got to explain the whole thing again. So at least this way you can tell them at your leisure. I don't know. Many, many factors. Yeah. But especially if you're an artist, you don't want to come – because nobody, if her name was Roseanne, you know, Weebelitz, you'd be like, who the hell is Roseanne Weebelitz? And then you'd have to look it up and go, oh, it was Roseanne Cash before.
Everybody should just go by pseudonyms, and that way they can – they don't have to worry about it, you know? She could have been, like, the guru or something, you know? Just make up a name.
This has been Deep Thoughts by Doug Whitfield.
Yeah. Or just make up a real name that's not your name at all. Like, I could be...
Eminem.
Well, that's like, no.
I'm just saying, that's not his real name.
I know, but that's because of it. That's his initials. Well, anyway, let's move on from that. The things that I'm going to mention them real quick. We talked about last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago, the musicals and Creative Commons and Public Domains musicals. So I got some information on that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Well, we probably won't talk about it next week because we'll be doing the thing with Headphonica. The next time we don't have an interview, maybe we'll talk about it when we end.
Okay.
This is the other thing I was going to mention with Eddie. So I'm going to do something a little bit different in 2 weeks' time, and we're going to have a guest host, not a interviewee.
Right. Instead of asking what they do, we're just going to talk with them like we talk with each other.
Yeah. Which a lot of the interviews kind of turn out like that anyway, mm-hmm. but, you know, rather than sort of having, you know, trying to push it along, it'll just be more pretty flow. We'll just have to push it along in the same way sometimes we have to push along ourselves.
Right.
But the main reason I wanted to bring this up is because Dan beat us to it. Have you listened to the latest Linux Outlaws?
No.
I'm so pissed because they had a guest host for the first time.
Oh, really?
People are going to think we copied them, but we totally didn't copy them. I'm going to say that next week,
I will
too.
Agree with you on this. I did not hear the show, and you did mention this a couple of weeks ago that you wanted to do this.
Yeah. So from now on, like when we say have the intro right after we say that, we need to say we did not copy Linux Outlaws. That was our idea, and they stole it. We did not put that idea under Creative Commons.
Did you post something? You know what? Did you post something on Identica about doing it that way?
You know, we didn't. They didn't know.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I thought it was a good idea.
No, oh, yeah.
Now I'm sad. But
truthfully,
whatever.
Leo Laporte beat us all to it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but that's different.
Have guest hosts all the time.
I only listen to Floss Weekly, and they used to like not have guest hosts. Mm. Now they kind of do.
Yeah, this week in tech, every week they have different guests, but they always just talk about news stories. Well, all right.
Yeah, we got more stuff, but we'll talk about it later, guys.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, thank you again for joining us for another Music Manumit at musicmanumit.com. And until next time, I'm Tom.
I'm Doug.
And we'll see you next time. Music Manumit.